about 10 pounds, and there was a sulkiness about his face. Yet the skin around his eyes and cheeks looked pinched, and Harry recognized the results of one too many micro-adjustments. In a way, Selden felt sorry for Cleon. For all his might and imperial sway, the Emperor was powerless against the passage of time. Once again, Cleon met Harry Selden alone, in the same lavishly furnished room of their first encounter. As was the custom, Selden waited to be addressed. After briefly assessing Selden's appearance, the Emperor said in an ordinary voice, "Glad to see you, Professor. Let us dispense with formalities, as we did on the former occasion on which I met you."
"Yes, sire," said Selden stiffly.
It was not always safe to be informal, merely because the Emperor ordered you to be so in an effusive moment. Cleon gestured imperceptibly, and at once the room came alive with automation, as the table set itself and dishes began to appear. Selden, confused, could not follow the details. The Emperor said casually,
"You will dine with me, Selden?"
It had the formal intonation of a question, but the force, somehow, of an order.
"I would be honored, sire," said Selden.
He looked around cautiously. He knew very well that one did not, or at any rate should not, ask questions of the Emperor, but he saw no way out of it. He said rather quietly, trying to make it not sound like a question, "The First Minister will not dine with us?"
"He will not," said Cleon. "He has other tasks at this moment, and I wish in any case to speak to you privately."
They ate quietly for a while, Cleon gazing at him fixedly, and Selden smiling tentatively. Cleon had no reputation for cruelty, or even for irresponsibility. But he could, in theory, have Selden arrested on some vague charge, and if the Emperor wished to exert his influence, the case might never come to trial. It was always best to avoid notice, and at the moment Selden couldn't manage it. Surely it had been worse 8 years ago, when he had been brought to the palace under armed guard. This fact did not make Selden feel relieved, however. Then Cleon spoke.
"Selden," he said, "the First Minister is of great use to me, yet I feel that at times people may think I do not have a mind of my own. Do you think that?"
"Never, sire," said Selden calmly. "No use protesting too much."
"I don't believe you. However, I do have a mind of my own. And I recall that when you first came to Trentor, you had this psychohistory thing you were playing with."
"I'm sure you also remember, sire," said Selden softly, "that I explained at the time it was a mathematical theory without practical application."
"So you said. Do you still say so?"
"Yes, sire."
"Have you been working on it since?"
"On occasion I toy with it, but it comes to nothing. Chaos unfortunately interferes, and predictability is not—" The Emperor interrupted.
"There is a specific problem I wish you to tackle. Do help yourself to the dessert, Selden. It is very good."
"What is the problem, sire?"
"This man, Jorunum. Demerzel tells me, oh, so politely, that I cannot arrest this man, and I cannot use armed force to crush his followers. He says it will simply make the situation worse."
"If the First Minister says so, I presume it is so."
"But I do not want this man Jorunum. At any rate, I will not be his puppet. Demerzel does nothing."
"I am sure that he is doing what he can, sire."
"If he is working to alleviate the problem, he certainly is not keeping me informed.
That may be, sire, out of a natural desire to keep you above the fray. The First Minister may feel that if Joronum should, if he should take over, said Cleon, with a tone of infinite distaste.
Yes, sire. It would not be wise to have it appear that you were personally opposed to him. You must remain untouched for the sake of the stability of the empire.
I would much rather assure the stability of the empire without Joronum. What do you suggest, Selden?
I, sire?
You, Selden, said Cleon impatiently. Let me say that I don't believe you when you say that psychohistory is just a game. Demerzel stays friendly with you. Do you think I am such an idiot as not to know that? He expects something from you. He expects psychohistory from you, and since I am no fool, I expect it too.
Selden, are you for Joronum? The truth?
No, sire, I am not for him. I consider him an utter danger to the empire.
Very well, I believe you. You stopped a potential Joronumite riot at your university grounds single-handedly, I understand.
It was pure impulse on my part, sire.
Tell that to fools, not to me. You had it worked out by psychohistory.
Sire!
Don't protest. What are you doing about Joronum? You must be doing something if you are on the side of the empire.
Sire, said Selden cautiously, uncertain as to how much the emperor knew, I have sent my son to meet with Joronum in the Dahl sector.
Why?
My son is a Dahlite, and shrewd. He may discover something of use to us.
May?
Only may, sire.
You'll keep me informed?
Yes, sire.
And Selden, do not tell me that psychohistory is just a game, that it does not exist. I do not want to hear that. I expect you to do something about Joronum. What it might be, I can't say, but you must do something. I will not have it otherwise. You may go.
Selden returned to Streeling University in a far darker mood than when he had left. Cleon had sounded as though he would not accept failure. It all depended on Rache now. Chapter 18. Rache sat in the anteroom of a public building in Dahl, into which he had never ventured, never could have ventured as a ragamuffin youth. He felt, in all truth, a little uneasy about it now, as though he were trespassing. He tried to look calm, trustworthy, lovable. Dad had told him that this was a quality he carried around with him, but he had never been conscious of it. If it came about naturally, he would probably spoil it by trying too hard to seem to be what he really was. He tried relaxing while keeping an eye on the official who was manipulating a computer at the desk. The official was not a Dahlite. He was, in fact, Gamble Dean Namarty, who had been with Joronum at the meeting with Dad that Rach had attended. Every once in a while, Namarty would look up from his desk and glance at Rach with a hostile glare. This Namarty wasn't buying Rach's lovability. Rach could see that. Rach did not try to meet Namarty's hostility with a friendly smile. It would have seemed too artificial. He simply waited. He had gotten this far. If Joronum arrived as he was expected to, Rach would have a chance to speak to him. Joronum did arrive, sweeping in, smiling his public smile of warmth and confidence. Namarty's hand came up, and Joronum stopped. They spoke together in low voices while Rach watched intently and tried in vain to seem as if he wasn't. It seemed plain to Rach that Namarti was arguing against the meeting, and Rach bridled a bit at that. Then Joranum looked at Rach, smiled, and pushed Namarti to one side. It occurred to Rach that while Namarti was the brains of the team, it was Joranum who clearly had the charisma. Joranum strode toward him and held out a plump, slightly moist hand. "Well, well, Professor Selden's young man, how are you?"
"Fine, thank you, sir."
"You had some trouble getting here, I understand."
"Not too much, sir."
"And you've come with a message from your father, I trust. I hope he is reconsidering his decision and has decided to join me in my great crusade."
"I don't think so, sir."
Joranum frowned slightly. "Are you here without his knowledge?"
"No, sir. He sent me."
"I see. Are you hungry, lad?"
"Not at the moment, sir."
"Then would you mind if I eat? I don't get much time for the ordinary amenities of life," he said, smiling broadly.
"It's all right with me, sir."
Together they moved to a table and sat down. Joranum unwrapped a sandwich and took a bite. His voice slightly muffled, he said, "And why did he send you, son?" Rach shrugged.
"I think he thought I might find out something about you that he could use against you. He's heart and soul with First Minister Demerzel."
"And you're not?"
"No, sir. I'm a Dalite."
"I know you are, Mr. Selden, but what does that mean?"
"It means I'm oppressed, so I'm on your side, and I want to help you. Of course, I wouldn't want my father to know."
"There's no reason he should know. How do you propose to help me?" He glanced quickly at Namarti, who was leaning against his desk, listening, with his arms folded and his expression lowering. "Do you know anything about psychohistory?"
"No, sir. My father don't talk to me about that. And if he did, I wouldn't get it. I don't think he's getting anywhere with that stuff."
"Are you sure?"
"Sure, I'm sure. There's a guy there, Hugo Amaril, also a Dalite, who talks about it sometimes. I'm sure nothing is happening."
"Ah. And can I see Hugo Amaril sometime, do you suppose?"
"I don't think so. He ain't much for Demerzel, but he's all for my father. He wouldn't cross him."
"But you would?"
Rach looked unhappy, and he muttered stubbornly, "I'm a Dalite."
Joranum cleared his throat. "Then let me ask you again. How do you propose to help me, young man?"
"I've got something to tell you that maybe you won't believe."
"Indeed? Try me. If I don't believe it, I will tell you so."
"It's about First Minister Ato Demerzel."
"Well?"
Rach looked around uneasily. "Can anyone hear me?"
"Just Namarti and myself."
"All right, then listen. This guy Demerzel ain't a guy. He's a robot."
"What?" exploded Joranum.
Rach felt moved to explain. "A robot is a mechanical man, sir. He ain't human. He's a machine."
Namarti broke out passionately.
"Jojo, don't believe that. It's ridiculous." But Joranum held up an admonitory hand. His eyes were gleaming.
"Why do you say that?"
"My father was in Mycogen once. He told me all about it. In Mycogen, they talk about robots a lot."
Yes, I know. At least I have heard so.
The Mycogenians believed that robots were once very common among their ancestors, but they were wiped out.
Namarty's eyes narrowed.
But what makes you think that Demerzel is a robot? From what little I have heard of these fantasies, robots are made out of metal, aren't they?
That's so, said Rach earnestly.
But what I heard is that there were a few robots that looked just like human beings, and they live forever.
Namarty shook his head violently.
Legends. Ridiculous legends. Jojo, why are we listening?
But Joranum cut him off quickly. No, GD, I want to listen. I've heard these legends, too.
But it's nonsense, Jojo.
Don't be in such a rush to say nonsense. And even if it were, people live and die by nonsense. It's not what is so much as what people think is. Tell me, young man, putting legends to one side, what makes you think Demerzel is a robot? Let's suppose that robots exist. What is it then about Demerzel that makes you say he is a robot? Did he tell you so?
No, sir, said Rach.
Did your father tell you so? Asked Joranum.
No, sir. It's just my own idea, but I'm sure of it.
Why? What makes you so sure?
It's just something about him. He doesn't change. He doesn't get older. He doesn't show emotions. Something about him looks like he's made of metal.
Joranum sat back in his chair and looked at Rach for an extended time. It was almost possible to hear his thoughts buzzing. Finally, he said,
Suppose he is a robot, young man. Why should you care? Does it matter to you?
Of course it matters to me, said Rach. I'm a human being. I don't want no robot in charge of running the Empire.
Joranum turned to Namarty with a gesture of eager approval.
Do you hear that, GD? I'm a human being. I don't want no robot in charge of running the Empire. Put him on holovision and have him say it. Have him repeat it over and over till it's drummed into every person on Trantor.
Hey, said Rach, finally catching his breath. I can't say that on holovision. I can't let my father find out.
No, of course not, said Joranum quickly. We couldn't allow that. We'll just use the words. We'll find some other Dalite, someone from each of the sectors, each in his own dialect, but always the same message. I don't want no robot in charge of running the Empire.
Namarty said,
And what happens when Demerzel proves he's not a robot?
Really, said Joranum. How will he do that? It would be impossible for him to do so, psychologically impossible. What? The great Demerzel, the power behind the throne, the man who has twitched the strings attached to Cleon the First all these years, and those attached to Cleon's father before him? Will he climb down now and whine to the public that he is too a human being? That would be almost as destructive to him as being a robot. GD, we have the villain in a no-win situation, and we owe it all to this fine young man here.
Rach flushed.
Joranum said, Rach is your name, isn't it? Once our party is in a position to do so, we won't forget. Dahl will be treated well, and you will have a good position with us. You're going to be Dahl's sector leader someday, Rach, and you're not going to regret you've done this, are you now?
Not on your life, said Rach fervently. In that case, we'll see that you get back to your father. You let him know that we intend him no harm, that we value him greatly. You can tell him you found that out in any way you please. And if you find anything else you think we might be able to use, about psychohistory in particular, you let us know.
You bet. But do you mean it when you say you'll see to it the doll gets some breaks?
Absolutely. Equality of sectors, my boy. Equality of worlds. We'll have a new empire with all the old villainies of privilege and inequality wiped out. And Rach nodded his head vigorously.
That's what I want.
Chapter 19. Cleon, Emperor of the Galaxy, was walking hurriedly through the arcade that led from his private quarters in the small palace to the offices of the rather tremendous staff that lived in the various annexes of the Imperial Palace, which served as the nerve center of the Empire. Several of his personal attachés walked after him, with looks of the deepest concern on their faces. The Emperor did not walk to others. He summoned them, and they came to him. If he did walk, he never showed signs of haste or emotional trauma. How could he? He was the Emperor, and as such, far more a symbol of all the worlds than a human being. Yet now he seemed to be a human being. He motioned everyone aside with an impatient wave of his right hand. In his left hand, he held a gleaming hologram.
"The First Minister," he said in an almost strangled voice, not at all like the carefully cultivated tones he had painstakingly assumed along with the throne. "Where is he?"
And all the high functionaries who were in his way fumbled and gasped and found it impossible to manage coherence. He brushed past them angrily, making them all feel undoubtedly as though they were living through a waking nightmare. Finally, he burst into Demerzel's private office, panting slightly, and shouted, literally shouted,
"Demerzel!"
Demerzel looked up with a trace of surprise and rose smoothly to his feet, for one did not sit in the presence of the Emperor unless specifically invited to.
"Sire," he said.
And the Emperor slammed the hologram down on Demerzel's desk and said,
"What is this? Will you tell me that?"
Demerzel looked at what the Emperor had given him. It was a beautiful hologram, sharp and alive. One could almost hear the little boy, perhaps 10 years old, speaking the words that were included in the caption. "I don't want no robot in charge of running the Empire." Demerzel said quietly,
"Sire, I have received this too."
"And who else has?"
"I am under the impression, sire, that it is a flyer that is being widely spread over Trentor."
"Yes. And do you see the person at whom that brat is looking?"
He tapped his imperial forefinger at it.
"Isn't that you?"
"The resemblance is striking, sire."
"Am I wrong in supposing that the whole intent of this flyer, as you call it, is to accuse you of being a robot?"
"That does seem to be its intention, sire."
"And stop me if I'm wrong, but aren't robots the legendary mechanical human beings one finds in thrillers and children's stories?"
"The Mycogenians have it as an article of faith, sire, that robots..."
"I'm not interested in the Mycogenians and their articles of faith. Why are they accusing you of being a robot?"
"Merely a metaphorical point, I'm sure, sire. They wish to portray me as a man of no heart, whose views are the conscienceless calculations of a machine."
"That's too subtle, Demerzel. I'm no fool.
He tapped the hologram again. They're trying to make people believe you are really a robot.
We can scarcely prevent it, sire, if people choose to believe that.
We cannot afford it. It detracts from the dignity of your office. Worse than that, it detracts from the dignity of the Emperor. The implication is that I would choose as my first minister a mechanical man. That is impossible to endure. See here, Demoiselle, aren't there laws that forbid the denigration of public officers of the Empire?
Yes, there are, and quite severe ones, sire, dating back to the great law codes of Abaramis.
And to denigrate the Emperor himself is a capital offense, is it not?
Death is the punishment, sire. Yes.
Well, this not only denigrates you, it denigrates me. And whoever did it should be executed forthwith. It was this Joranum, of course, who is behind it.
Undoubtedly, sire, but proving it might be rather difficult.
Nonsense. I have proof enough. I want an execution.
The trouble is, sire, that the laws of denigration are virtually never enforced, not in this century, certainly.
And that is why society is becoming so unstable, and the Empire is being shaken to its roots. The laws are still in the books, so enforce them.
Demerzel said, "Consider, sire, if that would be wise. It would make you appear to be a tyrant and a despot. Your rule has been a most successful one through kindness and mildness."
"Yes, and see where that got me. Let's have them fear me for a change, rather than love me, in this fashion."
"I strongly recommend that you do not do so, sire. It may be the spark that will start a rebellion."
"What would you do then? Go before the people and say, 'Look at me, I am no robot'?"
"No, sire, for as you say, that would destroy my dignity, and worse yet, yours."
"Then..."
"I am not certain, sire. I have not yet thought it through."
"Not yet thought it through? Get in touch with Selden."
"Sire..."
"What is so difficult to understand about my order? Get in touch with Selden."
"You wish me to summon him to the palace, sire?"
"No, there's no time for that. I presume you can set up a sealed communication line between us that cannot be tapped."
"Certainly, sire."
"Then do so, now."
Chapter 20.
Selden lacked Demerzel's self-possession, being as he was only flesh and blood. The summons to his office and the sudden faint glow and tingle of the scrambler field was indication enough that something unusual was taking place. He had spoken by sealed lines before, but never to the full extent of Imperial security. He expected some government official to clear the way for Demerzel himself. Considering the slowly mounting tumult of the robot flyer, he could expect nothing less. But he did not expect anything more either, and when the image of the Emperor himself, with the faint glitter of the scramble field outlining him, stepped into his office, so to speak, Selden fell back in his seat, mouth wide open, and could make only ineffectual attempts to rise. Cleon motioned him impatiently to keep his seat.
"You must know what's going on, Selden."
"Do you mean about the robot flyer, sire?"
"That's exactly what I mean. What's to be done?"
Selden, despite the permission to remain seated, finally rose. "There's more, sire. Joranum is organizing rallies all over Trantor on the robot issue. At least, that's what I hear on the newscasts."
It hasn't reached me yet. Of course not. Why should the Emperor know what is going on?
It is not for the Emperor to be concerned, sire. I'm sure that the First Minister...
The First Minister will do nothing, not even keep me informed. I turn to you and your psychohistory. Tell me what to do.
Sire?
I'm not going to play your game, Selden. You've been working on psychohistory for 8 years. The First Minister tells me I must not take legal action against Joranum. What then do I do?
Selden stuttered.
Sire, nothing. You have nothing to tell me?
No, sire, that is not what I mean. I mean you must do nothing.
Nothing.
The First Minister is quite right if he tells you that you must not take legal action. It will make things worse.
Very well. What will make things better?
For you to do nothing. For the First Minister to do nothing. For the government to allow Joranum to do just as he pleases.
How will that help?
And Selden said, trying to suppress the note of desperation in his voice, That will soon be seen. The Emperor seemed to deflate suddenly, as though all the anger and indignation had been drawn out of him. He said,
Ah, I understand. You have the situation well in hand.
Sire, I have not said that.
You need not say, I have heard enough. You have the situation well in hand, but I want results. I still have the Imperial Guard and the armed forces. They will be loyal. And if it comes to actual disorders, I will not hesitate. But I will give you your chance first.
His image flashed out, and Selden sat there, simply staring at the empty space where the image had been. Ever since the first unhappy moment when he had mentioned psychohistory at the decennial convention 8 years before, he had had to face the fact that he didn't have what he had incautiously talked about. All he had was the wild ghost of some thoughts, and what Hugo Amaril called intuition. Chapter 21. In 2 days, Joranum had swept Trentor, partly by himself, mostly through his lieutenants. As Harry muttered to Dors, it was a campaign that had all the marks of military efficiency. He was born to be a war admiral in the old days, he said. He's wasted on politics. And Dors said,
Wasted? At this rate, he's going to make himself First Minister in a week. And, if he wishes, Emperor in 2 weeks. There are reports that some of the military garrisons are cheering him.
Selden shook his head. It will collapse, Dors.
What? Joranum's party or the Empire?
Joranum's party. The story of the robot has created an instant stir, especially with the effective use of that flyer. But a little thought, a little coolness, and the public will see it for the ridiculous accusation it is.
But, Harry, said Dors tightly, you needn't pretend with me. It is not a ridiculous story. How could Joranum possibly have found out that Demerzel is a robot?
Oh, that. Why, Raich told him so.
Raich?
That's right. He did his job perfectly and got back safely with the promise of being made Dahl's sector leader someday. Of course he was believed. I knew he would be.
You mean you told Raich that Demerzel was a robot and had him pass on the news to Joranum?
Dors looked utterly horrified.
No, I couldn't do that. You know I couldn't tell Raich, or anyone, that Demerzel was a robot.
I told Rach as firmly as I could that Demerzel was not a robot. And even that much was difficult. But I did ask him to tell Joranum that he was. He is under the firm impression that he lied to Joranum.
But why, Harry? Why?
It's not psychohistory, I'll tell you that. Don't you join the Emperor in thinking I'm a magician. I just wanted Joranum to believe that Demerzel was a robot. He's a Mycogenian by birth, so he was filled from youth with his culture's tales of robots. Therefore, he was predisposed to believe, and he was convinced that the public would believe with him.
Well, won't they?
Not really. After the initial shock is over, they will realize that it's madcap fiction, or they will think so. I've persuaded Demerzel that he must give a talk on sub-etheric holovision to be broadcast to key portions of the Empire and to every sector on Trantor. He is to talk about everything but the robot issue. There are enough crises we all know to fill such a talk. People will listen and will hear nothing about robots. Then, at the end, he will be asked about the flyer. And he need not answer a word. He need only laugh.
Laugh? I've never known Demerzel to laugh. He almost never smiles.
This time, Doris, he'll laugh. It is the one thing that no one ever visualizes a robot doing. You've seen robots in holographic fantasies, haven't you? They're always pictured as literal-minded, unemotional, inhuman. That's what people are sure to expect. So Demerzel need merely laugh. And on top of that, do you remember Sun Master 14, the religious leader of Mycogen?
Of course I do. Literal-minded, unemotional, inhuman. He's never laughed either.
And he won't this time. And he won't this time. I've done a lot of work on this Joranum matter since I had that little set-to at the field. I know Joranum's real name. I know where he was born, who his parents were, where he had his early training, and all of it, with documentary proof, has gone to Sun Master 14. I don't think Sun Master likes breakaways.
But I thought you said you don't wish to spark off bigotry.
I don't. If I had given the information to the Holovision people, I would have. But I've given it to Sunmaster, where, after all, it belongs.
And he'll start off the bigotry.
Of course he won't. No one on Trantor would pay any attention to Sunmaster, whatever he might say.
Then what's the point?
Well, that's what we'll see, Doris. I don't have a psychohistorical analysis of the situation. I don't even know if one is possible. I just hope that my judgment is right. Chapter 22. Ato Demerzel laughed. It was not the first time. He sat there with Harry Seldon and Doris Van Ebbele in a tap-free room, and every once in a while, at a signal from Harry, he would laugh. Sometimes he leaned back and laughed uproariously. But Seldon shook his head. That would never sound convincing. So Demerzel smiled and then laughed with dignity, and Seldon made a face.
I'm stumped, he said. It's no use trying to tell you funny stories. You get the point only intellectually. You will simply have to memorize the sound.
Doris said,
use a holographic laugh track.
No, that would never be Demerzel. That's a bunch of idiots being paid to yak. It's not what I want. Try again, Demerzel. Demerzel tried again until Seldon said,
all right then, memorize that sound and reproduce it when you're asked the question. You've got to look amused. You can't make the sound of laughing, however proficient, with a grave face. Smile a little. Just a little. Pull back the corner of your mouth. Slowly, Demerzel's mouth widened into a grin. Not bad. Can you make your eyes twinkle?
What do you mean, twinkle? Said Doris indignantly. No one makes their eyes twinkle. That's a metaphorical expression.
No, it's not, said Selden. There's the hint of tears in the eye. Sadness, joy, surprise, whatever. And the reflection of light from that hint of fluid is what does it.
Well, do you seriously expect Demerzel to produce tears?
And Demerzel said, matter-of-factly, My eyes do produce tears for general cleansing, never in excess. Perhaps, though, if I imagine my eyes to be slightly irritated.
Try it, said Selden. It can't hurt.
And so it was that when the talk on subetheric holovision was over, and the words were streaking out to millions of worlds at thousands of times the effective speed of light, words that were grave, matter-of-fact, informative, and without rhetorical embellishment, and that discussed everything but robots, Demerzel declared himself ready to answer questions. He did not have to wait long. The very first question was, Mr. First Minister, are you a robot? Demerzel simply stared calmly and let the tension build. Then he smiled, his body shook slightly, and he laughed. It was not a loud, uproarious laugh, but it was a rich one, the laugh of someone enjoying a moment of fantasy. It was infectious. The audience tittered and then laughed along with him. Demerzel waited for the laughter to die down, and then, eyes twinkling, said, Must I really answer that? Is it necessary to do so? He was still smiling as the screen darkened. Chapter 23 I'm sure it worked, said Selden. Naturally, we won't have a complete reversal instantly. It takes time. But things are moving in the right direction now. I noticed that when I stopped Namarti's talk at the university field. The audience was with him until I faced him and showed spunk against odds. The audience began to change sides at once.
Do you think this is an analogous situation?
Asked Doris dubiously.
Of course. If I don't have psychohistory, I can use analogy, and the brains I was born with, I suppose. There was the First Minister, beleaguered on all sides with the accusation, and he faced it down with a smile and a laugh, the most non-robot thing he could have done. So that in itself was an answer to the question. Of course, sympathy began to slide to his side. Nothing would stop that. But that's only the beginning. We have to wait for Sun Master 14 and hear what he has to say.
Are you confident there, too?
Absolutely. Chapter 24 Tennis was one of Harry's favorite sports, but he preferred to play rather than watch others. He watched with impatience, therefore, as the Emperor Cleon, dressed in sports fashion, loped across the court to return the ball. It was imperial tennis, actually, so called because it was a favorite of emperors, a version of the game in which a computerized racket was used that could alter its angle slightly with appropriate pressures on the handle. Harry had tried to develop the technique on several occasions, but found that mastering the computerized racket would take a great deal of practice, and Harry Selden's time was far too precious for what was clearly a trivial pursuit. Cleon placed the ball in a non-returnable position and won the game. He trotted off the court to the careful applause of the functionaries who were watching, and Selden said to him, "Congratulations, sire. You played a marvelous game." Cleon said indifferently, "Do you think so, Selden? They're all so careful to let me win. I get no pleasure out of it."
Selden said, "In that case, sire, you might order your opponents to play harder."
"It wouldn't help. They'd be careful to lose anyway. And if they did win, I would get even less pleasure out of losing than out of winning meaninglessly."
"Being an emperor has its woes, Selden. Joranum would have found that out if he had ever succeeded in becoming one."
He disappeared into his private shower facility and emerged in due time, scrubbed and dried and dressed rather more formally.
"And now, Selden," he said, waving all the others away, "the tennis court is as private a place as we can find, and the weather is glorious, so let us not go indoors. I have read the Mycogenian message of this Sunmaster 14. Will it do?"
"Entirely, sire."
As you have read, Joranum was denounced as a Mycogenian breakaway and is accused of blasphemy in the strongest terms.
"And does that finish him?"
"It diminishes his importance fatally, sire. There are few who accept the mad story of the First Minister's robothood now. Furthermore, Joranum is revealed as a liar and a poseur, and worse, one who was caught at it."
"Caught at it, yes," said Cleon thoughtfully. "You mean that merely to be underhanded is to be sly, and that may be admirable, while to be caught is to be stupid, and that is never admirable."
"You put it succinctly, sire."
"Then Joranum is no longer a danger?"
"We can't be certain of that, sire. He may recover even now. He still has an organization, and some of his followers will remain loyal. History yields examples of men and women who have come back after disasters as great as this one, or greater."
"In that case, let us execute him, Selden."
Selden shook his head.
"That would be inadvisable, sire. You would not want to create a martyr, or to make yourself appear to be a despot."
Cleon frowned.
"Now you sound like Demerzel. Whenever I wish to take forceful action, he mutters the word despot. There have been emperors before me who have taken forceful action, and who have been admired as a result, and have been considered strong and decisive."
"Undoubtedly, sire, but we live in troubled times. Nor is execution necessary. You can accomplish your purpose in a way that will make you seem enlightened and benevolent."
"Seem enlightened?"
"Be enlightened, sire. I misspoke. To execute Joranum would be to take revenge, which might be regarded as ignoble. As emperor, however, you have a kindly, even paternal attitude toward the beliefs of all your people. You make no distinctions, for you are the emperor of all alike."
"What is it you're saying?"
"I mean, sire, that Joranum has offended the sensibilities of the Mycogenians, and you are horrified at his sacrilege, he having been born one of them. What better can you do but hand Joranum over to the Mycogenians and allow them to take care of him? You will be applauded for your proper imperial concern."
"And the Mycogenians will execute him, then?"
"They may, sire. Their laws against blasphemy are excessively severe. At best, they will imprison him for life at hard labor."
Cleon smiled.
"Very good. I get the credit for humanity and tolerance, and they do the dirty work.
They would, sire, if you actually handed Joronum over to them. That would, however, still create a martyr.
Now you confuse me. What would you have me do?
Give Joronum the choice. Say that your regard for the welfare of all the people in your empire urges you to hand him over to the Mycogenians for trial, but that your humanity fears the Mycogenians may be too severe. Therefore, as an alternative, he may choose to be banished to Nishaya, the small and secluded world from which he claimed to have come, to live the rest of his life in obscurity and peace. You'll see to it that he's kept under guard, of course.
And that will take care of things?
Certainly. Joronum would be committing virtual suicide if he chose to be returned to Mycogen, and he doesn't strike me as the suicidal type. He will certainly choose Nishaya, and though that is the sensible course of action, it is also an unheroic one. As a refugee in Nishaya, he can scarcely lead any movement designed to take over the empire. His following is sure to disintegrate. They could follow a martyr with holy zeal, but it would be difficult indeed to follow a coward.
Astonishing! How did you manage all this, Selden?
There was a distinct note of admiration in Cleon's voice. Selden said,
"Well, it seemed reasonable to suppose."
"Never mind," said Cleon abruptly. "I don't suppose you'll tell me the truth, or that I would understand if you did. But I'll tell you this much. Demerzel is leaving office. This last crisis has proved to be too much for him, and I agree with him that it is time for him to retire. But I can't do without a First Minister, and from this moment onward you are he."
"Sire!"
exclaimed Selden in mingled astonishment and horror.
"First Minister Harry Selden," said Cleon calmly. "The Emperor wishes it."
Chapter 25. "Don't be alarmed," said Demerzel. "It was my suggestion. I've been here too long, and the succession of crises has reached the point where the consideration of the three laws paralyzes me. You are the logical successor."
"I am not the logical successor," said Selden hotly. "What do I know about running an empire? The Emperor is foolish enough to believe that I solved this crisis by psychohistory. Of course I didn't."
"That doesn't matter, Harry. If he believes you have the psychohistorical answer, he will follow you eagerly, and that will make you a good First Minister."
"He may follow me straight into destruction."
"I feel that your good sense, or intuition, will keep you on target, with or without psychohistory."
"But what will I do without you, Daniil?"
"Thank you for calling me that. I am Demerzel no more, only Daniil. As to what you will do without me, suppose you try to put into practice some of Joronum's ideas of equality and social justice. He may not have meant them. He may have used them only as ways of capturing allegiance. But they are not bad ideas in themselves. And find ways of having Raich help you in that. He clung to you against his own attraction to Joronum's ideas, and he must feel torn and half a traitor. Show him he isn't. In addition, you can work all the harder on psychohistory, for the Emperor will be there with you, heart and soul."
"But what will you do, Daniil?"
"I have other things in the galaxy to which I must attend. There is still the Xeroth Law, and I must labor for the good of humanity, insofar as I can determine what that might be.
And Harry?
Yes, Daniil.
You still have doors. Selden nodded. Yes, I still have doors. He paused for a moment before grasping Daniil's firm hand with his own. Goodbye, Daniil.
Goodbye, Harry, Daniil replied.
And with that, the robot turned, his heavy First Minister's robe rustling as he walked away, head up, back ramrod straight, along the palace hallway. Selden stood there for a few minutes after Daniil had gone, lost in thought. Suddenly, he began moving in the direction of the First Minister's apartment. Selden had one more thing to tell Daniil, the most important thing of all. Selden hesitated in the softly lit hallway before entering. But the room was empty. The dark robe was draped over a chair. The First Minister's chambers echoed Harry's last words to the robot. Goodbye, my friend. Ato Demerzel was gone. R. Daniil Oliva had vanished. Part 2. Cleon the First. Cleon the First, though often receiving panegyrics for being the last emperor under whom the First Galactic Empire was reasonably united and reasonably prosperous, the quarter-century reign of Cleon the First was one of continuous decline. This cannot be viewed as his direct responsibility, for the decline of the empire was based on political and economic factors too strong for anyone to deal with at the time. He was fortunate in his selection of first ministers, Ato Demerzel and then Harry Selden, in whose development of psychohistory the emperor never lost faith. Cleon and Selden, as the objects of the final Joranumite conspiracy with its bizarre climax. Encyclopedia Galactica. Chapter 1. Mandel Gruber was a happy man. He seemed so to Harry Selden, certainly. Selden stopped his morning constitutional to watch him. Gruber, perhaps in his late 40s, a few years younger than Selden, was a bit gnarled from his continuing work in the Imperial Palace grounds. But he had a cheerful, smoothly shaven face, topped by a pink skull, not much of which was hidden by his thin, sandy hair. He whistled softly to himself as he inspected the leaves of the bushes for any signs of insect infestation. He was not the chief gardener, of course. The chief gardener of the Imperial Palace grounds was a high functionary who had a palatial office in one of the buildings of the enormous imperial complex, with an army of men and women under him. The chances are he did not inspect the palace grounds more often than once or twice a year. Gruber was but one of that army. His title, Selden knew, was Gardener First Class, and it had been well earned with 30 years of faithful service. Selden called to him as he paused on the perfectly level crushed gravel walk. Another marvelous day, Gruber. Gruber looked up and his eyes twinkled. Yes, indeed, First Minister, and it's sorry I am for those who be cooped up indoors. You mean as I am about to be. There's not much about you, First Minister, for people to sorrow over. But if you're disappearing into those buildings on a day like this, it's a bit of sorrow that we fortunate few can feel for you. I thank you for your sympathy, Gruber. But you know we have 40 billion Trantorians under the dome. Are you sorry for all of them? Indeed I am. I am grateful I am not of Trantorian extraction myself, so that I could qualify as a gardener. There be few of us on this world that work in the open. But here I be, one of the fortunate few. The weather isn't always this ideal.
That is true, and I have been out here in the sluicing rains and the whistling winds.